Last year's Australian fire season was the worst on record. 34 deaths, more than 3,500 homes lost, and billions of animals harmed. It was deeply shocking to all, but not a surprise to my next guest, Victor Stephenson. He's a specialist in Indigenous fire management who practices and teaches cultural burning. The idea that fire can be used to prevent fire is challenging, but is based on generations of knowledge of reading and healing land. Victor has written a memoir called Fire Country, How Indigenous Fire Management Could Help Save Australia. I began by asking him how he came to know about these fire practices.
That's an old knowledge system, and it's thousands and thousands of years old and has been transferred successfully through, cultural ways. And, I've been really fortunate to be able to have knowledge handed to me by elders, and that's how you get that knowledge. And the knowledge is inside the landscape. And when people talk about their elders and they go, "Oh, all the elders are past," and I tell them, "No, there's still one most important elder, and that is the country, and it's your country." And when we share knowledge from a knowledge base with knowledge holders to other communities and other areas that have a bit more fractured knowledge and need support with reviving their knowledge, that's what we do. We go and help them to rebuild that knowledge. And when we look at the ecosystems, we didn't burn all the ecosystems. And, when we have systems that we don't burn and we have ecosystems that we do burn. And in Australia and like other countries, there's a lot of ecosystems that need fire, and they got to have the fire. Otherwise the animals don't come back and they don't have the food, and we don't look after that country to become its healthiest, to also be resilient. So it comes from a real extensive knowledge base, and that's something that Western science is a young knowledge base, and traditional knowledge is an old knowledge base. So it's like the old man, the elder of knowledge, and it needs to be respected and listened to by the younger knowledge systems and supported in a more stronger way that supports it working from a practical knowledge base, and then supporting it with the modern ways and building our solutions from the bottom up.
How have you been able to influence or even potentially change the current knowledge system as applied by governments, by councils, by park rangers, particularly following on from serious incidents of wildfires in Australia beginning in September last year and, of course, at the beginning of this year as well? How much have they been much more open to hearing from you and people like you?
The people have been so much more open, yeah, and like the broader community, and the governments also are opening their ear. But we still got a long way to go because we've come from a colonized situation in Australia where Aboriginal people never got an opportunity. Even today we struggle to be heard and to be sitting at the round table and making decisions and being part of mainstream decisions. And it's only evident that Aboriginal knowledge is the leader and professional when it comes to environment in our own country. I mean, we've been living here for, thousands of years, and, it's the land is embedded in the language and actions and cultural practices, and have lived with fire for so long and live with fire in a way where it's not a fear of fire, but a farming and looking after the country. And it's like permaculture, very selective and very careful burning in certain systems and burning for food. Now today, with those big bushfires that have just happened in the last summer, a lot of the governments have woken up now, and a lot of the private sector as well, just the general public and broader community have woken up, and But it's been the people on the ground and people in communities that have really made this happen. And it's been a lot of work prior to that as well, decades of advocating this knowledge through workshops with Indigenous communities and non-Indigenous communities alike, all over the country. And we've been educating them and trying to get them to change even before these wildfires that were recent ones. And yeah, and they are starting to listen. But, you know, we still live in a world where there's a lot of agendas based on the land and resources, and there's a lot of interest in our water, and the government sees it as very profitable. And that's a hard competitor, you know, when it comes to looking after the land, because we're up against all of these problems, and it's the hidden agendas and it's the separation of people that make it also difficult. But we're slowly getting there, and that's a positive take on that, because since I first started doing this with the old people 27 years ago, you know, we weren't even allowed a lot of fire, and we had to do our first fires were illegal ones. And now, you know, I've been doing this program all over the country, and to this point now there's communities that are now doing the work, and you know, there's fire agencies starting to listen. But the problem is that they're not trained, and people aren't trained to look after the land this way. And it's a complex knowledge. It's very layered. You have to understand all the soils, the trees. You know, there's a lot of knowledge involved. And particularly when it's a changed landscape with weeds and cleared land, your fire techniques need to be adjusted to best put the right fire on the country to be the best fire for the seed banks, for the natives and the soils. And so we don't destroy the trees and the organic matter in the soils. And it's a whole regenerative process now, and healing. You know, you need to be taught how to do that. But
Victor, through your programs, how practically do you teach that? How do you undertake that process so that people can learn the traditional fire management processes of your people?
The way that we apply it is through the traditional transfer of that knowledge. So in other words, we stick to the Indigenous teaching methods, and that is to be practical. Indigenous knowledge is proactive. It's not reactive like the Western system, and it's totally opposite. We do the workshops and help people in their own country and burn with them on their own country and help them to read their own landscapes. And we light the fires at every workshop, you know, or mostly every workshop. And if we're not lighting the fires, then we're there planning to light the fires in the next opportunity we get down the track. So it's all practical. And you have to take people on the land. Everyone needs to go on the land to learn. You can't learn it in sitting inside a meeting room or looking at maps. You can't do that, because the most important thing that needs to be involved in this conversation is the land. The country is living, and the country is the boss, and our mother is the one that we need to be listening to. And that's exactly what Indigenous land management is. It's reading the country and listening to country and doing what we're told to do from the country.
Victor, how do you do that with communities who are so adverse to undertaking any fire management simply because of the flammability of the area? I'm talking with specific reference to communities you mention in the book, like the Heath Country. How were you able to convince them to undertake these processes, given they were so scared of the flammability of that area?
That's where they need to allow us to come in and show them. It's really simple. We need to, like I was saying before, you know, like we're in the current position of, you know, developing the training packages, you know, and the aim for us is to, in the next 5 years, is to get 100 fire practitioners more, you know, hopefully more. And the aim from there further on is to get 1,000 fire practitioners that are skilled in understanding the landscape and knowing what to do immediately to heal landscapes, and with fire and without fire, through different methods. And that needs to happen in people's backyards, and so that they can see And that's why we do the workshops in a practical way and invite all the public. I mean, we got the children at our workshops, women and children and old people, and we got a whole community at our workshops, you know, and including the fire services. And that's what needs to happen. You know, we need to shift their, you know, evolve this culture in Australia and in all countries that have fire. Everyone needs to learn to live with it again and understand it and evolve their culture with fire into the future. And that's exactly the process we've started, and that's why it's so successful.
Victor, there's such an entrenched interconnectedness between trees and soil and plants and weather conditions and sky that you talk about in the book. You say, quote, "The trees are the key to reading country. They are the traditional elders of each individual ecosystem. They tell what the place should look like and what animals and plants should be living there." How did you learn to read the trees?
The very first step is to get to know the trees, meet them, know what country they are, what soils they have, what sort of grasses and medicines and foods that live in that system, what sort of animals depend on that place. All of that bush tucker knowledge and bush medicine knowledge is crucial, and that knowledge of bush medicines and foods is tells us what's meant to be there, and it also tells us what that country should look like. And when we go to a system that you know, that we know that has the same soils and trees and stuff, and there's no grasses or there's just leaves, you know, it's sick. And so we say, you know, we burn it to bring back the plants that are supposed to be there. And when we see them, that's our indicators of success. And there are short-term indicators that show us that we're on the right road to healing country and improving landscapes. We teach them the trees first and to get to understand that land.
And of course, you were, you say, fortunate to be taught by two amazing elders. I'm talking specifically, of course, of Tommy George, TG, and George Musgrave, his brother, or Poppy, as you refer to him in the book. How did they teach you? What was their process that they went through to teach you how to, as you say, read the trees, read the soil, look at the land area, look at the animals, or not, as the case may be?
They taught me by being on the land. We were living on the land. I was living with the Mal people for almost 15 years, you know, up in out on country with them, and every day we were on country. And, you know, we used to hunt to get our meat and fishing and, you know, out there, you know, using all the foods and medicines of trees. And the Mal people were just, you know, they wanted to offload that knowledge, and I wanted to learn, and they wanted to offload that knowledge and teach that knowledge. And we found each other, and that's what we did. And by living on country and living with country is the best way to know country and to learn country. And but that was every day, you know, like learning the trees and asking questions, and, you know, the Mal fellow showing me. And so that's exactly the same thing that I started to do. You know, well, we started to do it together, me and the Mal people, mentor other communities in our own regions and neighbouring communities. So we started to show them, and the old fellows, we started to process together and trying to teach others later on down the track. When they passed, those old people, I kept on going.
They also coined a phrase, didn't they? I can't remember if it was TG or Poppy coined the phrase, praction. What is praction, and why is it important in Indigenous fire management?
Praction, yeah. Well, praction is a word that I guess we created ourselves. I guess Vishun the old fella said it, and I had to take order from that word. So praction was like every time my people taught me something, you know, a Poppy would say, you know, you got a praction. And what it was actually meaning was practice, you know. So, but yeah, you don't correct them, old people. You know, and I used to love the way that tailor the English language, you know, the way they want to talk, you know. And so praction, you know, it sounded, it was quite cute anyway. And so, but anyway, he would always say, you know, praction, praction. And so praction was always a word that would he would say to me when I was learning new skills. And I would go and praction. And then after over so many years of doing the praction, it ended up being that the praction was always traditional practice and was always, a practice that was a part of looking after country and a cultural practice that is based on holistic thinking and interconnectedness. And that is what Indigenous knowledge is and Indigenous land management practices are. It's an action that benefits the entire environment and everything living on that environment.
As I read the book, it felt very Māori to me. There were certain instances where you would talk about things like the interconnectedness with the trees. You would say things like you have to talk about, you must respect the life force, that before burnings, the old people yell out to the spirits in the country. Sounds very Māori to me. A very, very Māori way of acting within the forest, within what you would call country. Have you seen this being reinforced as you've gone on in this journey throughout other Indigenous communities around the world?
Well, that's what you say. It sounds Māori to you, but really it sounds like Indigenous knowledge and Indigenous people. That's the same all over the world. You know, right in Fire Country, like in my experiences, and even in Finland, and over there with those people and traditional people who are very fair-skinned, they're proper Aboriginal people from their country there, in America and Canada and, in other places, there's Indigenous people all over the world, and they all have an interest in land and they all have the same connection to land, and we all have the same knowledge structure, which underpins our identity, and connection to country. And we're all activating at this moment all over the world to try and be part of a solution to look after country. And all of the Indigenous communities, if you close your eyes and listen, and with your eyes closed to elders over in another country, it's just like listening to your own elders at home. It's no different. And even the problems socially are the same. We're struggling with the same problems with our youth. We're struggling with the same problems with the government. We're struggling with the same problems with the environment. We have the same negative points, but we also have the same positive points. And that's, even though we have our own language and our own identity and we're all unique, we have a foundation that is very similar. And that's why Indigenous people connect so greatly no matter where we're from and have a great respect for each other.
You're listening to RNZ National. We're talking to Victor Stephenson, the author of Fire Country, How Indigenous Fire Management Could Help Save Australia. Victor, how do you respond to non-Indigenous people who might be listening to us now, and indeed non-Indigenous Australians that you've probably had to deal with, who say that the way that you talk about Indigenous fire management is simply animism, that it has no place in scientific application of fire management to deal with wildfires in Australia?
Basically, if people think that Indigenous knowledge is not relevant, and they think that Aboriginal fire knowledge is not part of the solution with our current situations, then they're completely wrong. That's one thing that never changes, and that's the law of this land. And no matter what you do to this country, it always boils back to its identity and to that knowledge of that land, right to the bed soils of understanding it and what it needs to rebuild and recover. So that never changes. Anyone who has an opinion that says that Indigenous knowledge is not relevant now, obviously the people who don't know what the knowledge is. And that's why, right from the beginning, from doing this work, we've been up against all sorts of critics right from the beginning, 27 years ago. And the very first thing that they said right back then was, there's no Indigenous fire knowledge left in Australia. And this is what the scientists were saying. And they came to our community and said that. And I was like, yeah, right, that's not true. And so when we started to do the burning, that soon sorted that out. We never heard that again. And then down the track, I started to hear things like you can't share knowledge from Northern Australia to Southern Australia. They were saying that very strongly when I started traveling down south to support communities. That soon stopped because they realized that was wrong, that we could share knowledge, and we can share knowledge right across around the world with this knowledge base. And even today now, they're saying it's too expensive. That's the latest one now.
too expensive to employ or to undertake or put in practice traditional Indigenous fire management systems.
Yeah, they say it's too expensive, and meanwhile, there's billions and billions of dollars that are going down the drain. You know, the health of our environment is priceless. You can't compare that with the dollar sign, and you can't compare the health of our future generations and the happiness of our people and children with the dollar sign. And it's just ridiculous.
You say in the book, quote, "You cannot lock up the land," that conservation, quote, "conservation laws regulating fire have been a key contributor to wildfires in Australia now." Really?
That's exactly right. It's, believe it or not, that, like they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, like, it's a lot of our conservation has been the problem. And that's the modern thinking. That's the young Western knowledge system that did that. And that's the young one that don't listen to the old one. And it's the same with the people. When a young fella don't listen to the old man, the old man says, "Hey, you don't do that." And the young fella says, "Yeah, whatever," runs off and goes, "Yeah, we know what we're doing." And then he makes a mistake. And then the old fella says, "I told you so." It's exactly the same. Conservation excluded fire from the landscape. And as a consequence, the land that always had fire and always had people in the land, a part of that land, stopped. And it was left to just be neglected, which in conservation's terms was, they thought they were looking after it. But at the end of the day, it overgrows with weeds and it gets wildfires, and it slowly just starts to destroy the land. And even if we don't get wildfires, the grasses start to get old and they suppress the landscape. And then you start to lose vegetation and food, and the root system start to rot. And
Load more fuel into the land that therefore causes wildfires eventually anyway. Victor, I wonder if, because obviously very clearly in the book, there is clear and practiced observation of Aboriginal law in the work that you do. But couldn't you get the same outcome as that which you are seeking as a part of the processes and the programs that you undertake for fire management without observing traditional Aboriginal law?
You can't get that relationship with the land without help. You can't see through that lens without someone showing you how to see and how to look through that lens, or giving you that lens to look through. And that's why Indigenous knowledge has a role to play. And there's a more important reason why that we maintain that cultural integrity and that cultural lens, is because of the benefits that come from that. I mean, if we just look at fire as a hazard reduction, then that's all it's ever going to be. But if we start to look at it from a cultural lens, with foods and the plants and the animals, and this whole wealth of knowledge comes with that, is a whole range of benefits that feed into education, that feed into foods, that helps with the agriculture sector, livelihoods, regenerating landscapes that are damaged. And it feeds into even into the cities. The lawyers that want to fight for the land, and our next politicians should be learning this so that they know, understand this knowledge for their decisions in the mainstream as well, so that we're adjusting our modern culture to the in sync with the natural law. We all are in this together, and we all have to promote change together. And it's going to be from working on that, from a practical knowledge base, is the way to go. People have got no choice but to reconnect with the land. They've got no choice.
So that's what you talk about in the book, about managing country on all levels, across all levels. And you also say that that should be a thing that children have to learn. Do you honestly believe that this can and will happen in Australia?
Yes. Honestly, I do believe. And
How?
this,
How can that happen, Victor?
well, it's already happening. We've already got communities all over the Australia, and not just on ourselves. We've got communities activating everywhere. I mean, we've got all the northern communities doing their work with fire, and that's on an international platform now. We're going overseas and even supporting communities overseas now. There's communities in Australia in the southern areas that are starting to do their burns on country now, and the training programs have started in some places, the pilot programs. We have Fire Sticks now, our organization, that helps to support the communities. It's happening. We've got women in fire. When I say we, I mean all of us around Australia as a collective. Whether we're working together or not, this is a movement that is happening, and it's really needed because we got to look after our environment, and we need to also heal our society too, because our society is also very fractured. When you see our land burning like you've seen, and when you see all these problems in the landscape, then it's a fair chance that we have fractured society, and people and land go together. And that's the thing. When the conservation took people out of the land, that was a big mistake. They didn't even know that people were part of that land, and they're always looking at it from the outside. But we're on the inside. And if we're going to look after our environment, then we have to heal our community too. And that's why the Indigenous knowledge perspective is so important, because of its layered benefits into both in environment and social and community.
How do you deal, Victor, with the responsibility of the legacy left by TG and Poppy with you to continue that legacy on? How do you deal with that responsibility?
Well, I deal with it, you know, in honour, really. I mean, I've been taught very well by them old people. And that's why the process is so successful, because it's I listen to the Mofollas and listen to the country. And, you know, we don't go anywhere without invitation from community. So it's the communities need to be their aspiration. And so everywhere I go and all the work I do is through invitation only by the communities that want to do this. And that's firstly the first step that is going to be successful. And following those cultural protocols and doing it in a way that you are pushing people in front and, you know, sharing and caring and building all those networks and helping people is, you know, that's what needs to happen and what we need to do. And that's what I have always have been doing, is putting our people first, put country first, work for spirit and work for country and look after the, you know. And that's what the old people taught me. So when I carry on from their work, and we, you know, after they've left, it's just a real privilege, you know. And that's my strongest point, is the land will always be with us, you know. And the right way of looking at working, and the right way of working with people, is so important. That's really is, you know, people got to really understand that, you know, you got to know how to work with people, and that's you know, where a lot of the cultural protocol come in, but not just for Aboriginal people, but for non-Indigenous people too, you know. You know, you can't say, oh, this is just for Aboriginal people, and exclude people, because they all live on this country now. So one of the biggest ways and one of the most important parts of this work, and what the old people really taught me, is to be inclusive, to do this work in a way that includes everyone in respect of people and in respect of that place. And from there, you know, doing this work and that, showing people how they fit in and how they're a part of it and the roles that they can play to be a part of that working together, because this is a massive country and it's going to take all of us to fix it.
That was Victor Stephenson. His book is called Fire Country, How Indigenous Fire Management Could Help Save Australia.